Solar energy, for example, being decentralized, being solar water heaters, photovoltaics, passive solar architecture, is a far greater job producer in the community, far greater small business producer, far greater consumer producing their own power at home than the centralized forms of energy known as coal, oil, gas, or nuclear, with their devastating long-range consequences. So basically, it's putting together a strategic analysis that is empirically based and normatively grand that propels the civic force that's needed to put the power behind the answers and the solutions that are unfolding or ready for application in this area. The point is to get a sense of urgency. There is an incrementalism to pollution that we've learned to live with. So there's a lot of vehicle pollution in Montreal. So people are still getting up in the morning, they're going to work, they're raising their families, they're having fun. So sometimes we see certain lung diseases, and we see cancers, and we can't connect A to B. It's not like a mugging, you know. A smogging is not like a mugging, but it affects more people, of course. A silent cumulative violence that we too charitably call pollution. But just look at it from a few centuries time, you see. Look what's happened just in the last few decades. We go from fish kills and unswimmable rivers into contaminated underground and surface drinking water, into destruction of the equatorial forest, into ozone depletion, into the greenhouse effect, into the kinds of situations where even if we do the right thing totally today, we've discounted a few decades already in terms of greenhouse gases and ozone depletion, toxics. It is important to get a sense of how rapid these technologies are unfolding and how this little tiny globe of ours, this little planet, which has a core of life-sustaining environment, it's about 2 to 3 miles high, where all the air, water, and soil are to sustain 6 billion people and the flora and the fauna. Tiny slice of life, and how fragile it truly is. Look how fragile the oceans are. As the corporate technology, the technosphere, attacks the biosphere, the technosphere with ever greater hubris, ever greater energy, ever greater arrogance, ever greater imbalance of power against democratic forces, moving into the third world with huge effusions of hydrocarbons coming out of China now. They're third in the world. They'll be first within a decade in their contribution of hydrocarbons with the dirty coal that they're using. And all these third world countries, with far greater populations, saying to us, how dare you lecture to us about our environment after what you've done to yours? That is a very irrational comment, but it's very understandable. Just because we messed up, why should they think they have the right to mess up too? It's their people at stake as well. Asia is sinking in a pool of pollution. Any of you been to Bangkok lately? Beijing? Staggering, mind-bending contamination. Children growing up in places we can't even see them. They are so enveloped by contaminants and toxics. 200 million child laborers in dungeon factories in the world, according to the International Labor Organization of the UN. And if you just add another 2 billion automobiles in 40 years, what are you left with? The immorality of our conventional corporate technology can be reduced to the following point. If everybody used in the world the same technology, the same kinds of energy, the same amount of chemicals per capita that we use in Canada and the United States, the world would be uninhabitable. Add another 2 billion motor vehicles to the 650 million that we now have, and use the same infernal, eternal, internal combustion engine with the nitrogen oxides and the hydrocarbons and the carbon monoxide and the asbestos from the brake linings, etc., and see what's left of the world. We have in our country 260 million people. What do you have in your country? 35 million? You have 35, yeah? 30 million. China has realistically 1.4 billion, officially 1.2. India will hit 1 billion within the next 2 years, three, 4 years. And add the other countries, and you can see they all want the good life. And now they've unleashed their production machines, and you can see the result. You can see how many trees are going to be left. What's going to happen to land erosion? What's going to happen to underground water supplies? The techno-twits among us think that technology will always solve things in time. Things will always be solved. There'll be another innovation coming along. You know, we've got food contamination in our country with E. coli. So you know what some companies now want to sell us? Antibacterial rinses. So we get the food from the supermarkets and we spray them with these rinses, huh? That's almost as bad as the cosmetic company selling us foot spray. You know, why wash it when you can spray it, huh? True, there will always be a product to deal with a debacle. Back in the 1960s, I was watching television in Los Angeles once, and along came an ad, and it said, buy murine for smog-ridden eyes. And Union Carbide, which damaged more than its share of lungs in its plants in West Virginia and elsewhere, was seen advertising in a business magazine in the early 70s a portable oxygen unit for people to carry around who have emphysema. There'll always be a product. The question is, will there really be a remedy that prevents it at its cause? And this is where we all come in. We have got to look at this environmental thing as something more than its stereotype. That is, green spaces, tree huggers, and other ridicule patterns. We've got to integrate it with the whole way we develop models of economic development, the whole ways we redefine progress, the whole ways we construct our own legitimate yardsticks, with the way we mobilize what we buy personally, with what industry buys, with how to restructure corporate institutions so that down the line they don't be major contributors to omnicide. And in order to be an example to the burgeoning countries of Asia, Africa, and South America, we better do it fast. Otherwise, what we gain, we'll lose in spades in those countries, such as hydrocarbon emissions. Let me end on this note. I want to refer again to the Quebec PIRG materials out there, because the students in this province can be a major force. A major force. New York PIRG, for example, has a $3 million budget, offices in 12 cities, lobbyists in the state capitol, litigators in the courts. They canvass over a million homes a year, etc., for just a few dollars per student per year. You have far more student rights at your university, it may come as a surprise to you, than U.S. students do. While the U.S. students were battling the civil rights struggles in the Vietnam War, in the 60s, Canadian students were battling for more student rights, and they got them. In most universities in Canada, you can determine the student fee, I'm told by students in Canada. Is that true? Okay. You know what they have to do in the States? They first have a student referendum, then they petition the president of the college, university, then they have to go through the board of trustees, mostly composed of corporate executives on loan, ridden with conflicts of interest, like coal company executives stopped West Virginia students from forming their PIRG because they dominated the Board of Trustees, the University of West Virginia. And by the time that occurs, over two-thirds of the referendums are blocked for establishing a $6 per student fee or whatever, even when they allow students who oppose this to decline paying, protecting majority rights in the referendum and the loser's rights as well. But I think that if you look at yourself as having a sense of legacy, you'll see that even if you don't directly benefit from the student power that you mobilize here, the students who come after you will, and they'll be very grateful. And by building these kinds of institutions, you'll train yourself with civic skills that you can put to work long after you graduate. Now, most universities do not teach civic skills. They're too important. If I were to ask you, for instance, can you write a 1,000-word essay on your academic skills, your social skills, your athletic skills? You probably could. Can you write a 1,000-word essay on your citizen skills? First thing you'd ask me is, what are those other than voting? What are civic skills? Civic skills are the skills of practicing democracy effectively and not dropping out and becoming apathetic and powerless. There are skills in how to get information, how to form coalitions, how to put on news conferences, how to do political profiles of your members of parliament. There are skills in how to use the courts, on how to use Freedom of Information Act, on how to use the tools that are latent so they can get you more tools, like the initiative, referendum recall. A citizen skill would be able to develop a momentum behind requiring Quebec Hydro to put in their billing envelopes through their subsidiaries when they send you an electric bill, a little envelope that invites you as citizens in this province to join an energy consumer group. This little envelope would drop out. See if I have it here somewhere. Here it is. This is the one in Illinois. It used to come into the electric and telephone gas bill. See the title? It says, fed up with skyrocketing utility bills? Are you tired of hearing excuses? And it says, fill out the coupon. $5 dues a year. You elect the council directors. They hire the lobbyists, the organizers, the attorneys, the accountants, the engineers to take on the electric gas telephone company. You know how many people joined in 18 months in Illinois? 200,000. Why? Because it was a convenient facility that popped out of an envelope that contained their utility bill, which meant that it was at their peak point of interest. They saw the bill, they said, oh, and out fell this little thing. Are you fed up? Now, you can do the same thing in Canada, easier, because there is some truly stupid Supreme Court decision in 1986 that basically treated a corporation as a human being under our Constitution. This artificial entity, chartered by the state government, is given all the rights of human beings, plus privileges and immunities that you can never have because you're a human being. You're not an artificial entity. You cannot be in 80 places at once around the world. You cannot create your own parent called a holding company for evasive action. You cannot deduct and diffuse responsibility so easily. You cannot go into Chapter 11 bankruptcy and evade your debtors, your claimants as easily as corporations can and still stay in business and pay their executives high salaries. They have perpetual life. They have limited liability galore, and yet they have the same rights we have. That's why Justice Brandeis of our Supreme Court called them Frankensteins in an opinion in the 1930s. But anyway, here comes the Supreme Court. We're ready to spread this all over the country. Bank statement inserts, insurance company inserts, electric telephone gas company inserts, a magnificent consumer revolution with millions of committed people joining these various groups. And the Supreme Court, 5-3, said it is unconstitutional for state governments to require, at no expense to the electric utility, to insert this in their billing envelope because it gives the utility pressure that is irresistible to rebut and therefore violates its right to remain silent, which violates its First Amendment rights under the U.S. Constitution. So now we're trying to get the state governments to put it in their envelopes that they send to citizens, like motor vehicle registration envelope. You get that every year. You know, they send you a lot of envelopes. Put it in there. Now, in Canada, you don't have that kind of constitutional protection of corporations. The corporation as a person is more mature in our country than any other country in the world. And that's going to be a big political debate. The corporation should not have all the rights of human beings and not have the privileges and immunities that they have. Otherwise, there's no such thing as being equal under the law. You equal under the law with General Motors. Cannot be done with this kind of constitutional doctrine. Ontario Hydro or your parliament could require this. What would happen? What's the population of Quebec? 7 million. Illinois is 11 million. So let's say you have basically, in 18 months, you have 150,000 dues-paying members. That could be the biggest consumer group in the province, focusing on energy, renewable energy, sustainable energy, energy efficiency, the whole business of hydropower where, from whose lands, residential efficiency, appliance efficiency, furnace efficiency. There's a, back in the 70s, there was an office building in Toronto. They used 25% of the energy that other office buildings use right down the road. Same size. How come? Different architecture. Different equipment. More energy efficient equipment. That's in the 70s. What are we doing here 20 years later? The point is that this is a citizen skill. This is figuring out a strategy of how do you go at the peak point of interest and get people to band together for citizen power. When you don't have big money to go on TV and put ads in newspapers, etc., you basically say, look, these companies are monopolies, legal monopolies. Ontario Hydro is a crown corporation. Quebec Hydro is a crown corporation, right? They're monopolies. What do you get in return? A civic skill means we learn the principle of reciprocity. We don't just look at television and say, if we don't like what's on TV, we can turn it off. We own the public airwaves. We own the public airwaves. And we are the landlords. We are the landlords. The radio and TV stations are the tenants. In the United States, they pay no rent to the Federal Communications Commission. Do they pay a license fee to CRTC?
Insignificant.
Huh? Insignificant. You know what it's worth? Billions of dollars for the television radio industry. That's what we call corporate welfare, aid to dependent corporations, huh? Now, actual stylistic gas-guzzling monsters, you would not have expectation levels to get those engineers liberated in the auto industry so that the executives let them put in more fuel-efficient, safer, less frequently maintained cars.
Get rid of them.
Or get rid of them with mass transit. There's no expectation level. One of the most important things you can do in your education is raise your expectation levels. What is your expectation level of Parliament? Cynicism. That's your expectation level. I mean, students love to be cynical. You know, there are two ways to go through life. One is to believe everything. The other is to believe nothing. Both ways avoid thinking. So, cynicism. Cynicism means you're preparing yourself not to count. You're preparing yourself to drop out from democracy. Skepticism means you're ready to roar back. You understand what is not being done, that should be done. You're skeptical of the rhetoric. You're skeptical of the promises that are always broken. You roar back. Which is it, cynicism or skepticism? When you raise your expectation level, you start asking questions like this. Why is it that the Canadian people own a great portion of this Commonwealth, but they control virtually nothing? Who controls the Crown lands? Who owns the Crown lands? They're two different entities. The mining companies, the timber companies, look what they're doing to BC. Crown lands owned by the people, controlled by the corporations. Public airwaves owned by the people, controlled by the broadcasting companies. And most people don't think anything of it because they grow up corporate with low expectations. They grow up in a way, and everybody grows up corporate. I've grown up corporate. Everybody grows up corporate in our societies. You grow up corporate, and if someone says to you, what do you own? You say, house, car, clothing, books, shoes, newspapers, VCRs, tapes. You say, go on, go on, go on. 30 minutes, you're down to, you know, tacks, you know, pins. Right? And you can be at it for 5 hours before you give up. And you say, well, don't you own with other Canadians the federal lands? And don't you own the air and the water and the public infrastructure? Don't you own the public airways? Don't you own billions of dollars of pension monies that corporations control, like banks and insurance companies? See, there's no expectation level. Now, if your expectation level is down, you're under corporate control. You are the subject of a controlling process that is far more efficient than 1984 because it's more like Brave New World, not 1984. And so when people are told in the U.S., you live in a free country, if you don't like the stations, turn off. You say, oh no, this is my house. It's our house, the public airways. I don't want any tenant who doesn't pay me any rent and who exploits and trivializes my property and sensationalizes my property to tell me that if I don't like what the tenant is doing, I can quit the house. Expectation level. And here's where it really is so telling. I grew up like most kids, looking at cars and horsepower and style and bumpers and chrome, and I could identify models as a kid from fins and hood ornaments and so on. And then I began reading. I began realizing that every day people were being subject to the most horrible deaths and injuries in totally survivable crashes if these cars were built with airbags, padded dash panels, collapsible steering columns, rollover bars, stronger door latches, etc. Suddenly my expectation level went up. My indignation level went up too. My action level went up. I saw too many people dying on highways, mutilated, bones crushed, chopped in half, decapitated. Why? Because those corporate executives in Detroit had the power of life and death over millions of Americans, because they determined when the collapsible steering column was going to go into cars, and they delayed 80 years after it was patented, and 250,000 people were killed by rearward displacing steering columns. 250,000 people. And when your expectation level goes up for your education, you hold yourself to civic standards, not just academic standards, not just curriculum yardstick standards. You say to yourself, I not only want a good grade, I want to become a more effective citizen, because knowledge without action is not a peculiarly valuable form of knowledge. There's an old Oriental aphorism out of ancient China. To know and not to act is not to know. That's over 2,000 years old for anybody who is only interested in things written since 1990. Over 2,000 years old. To know and not to act is not to know. The commonwealth of property should be a major political agenda. Politicians should run for election where they take a stand that those who own as a commonwealth must control, that the people who have the commonwealth of ownership in all of these resources must never be allowed to surrender their control to global corporations increasingly absentee-owned, far remote from any local, provincial, or national accountabilities. As Canadians, your expectation level has been uniquely reduced in some ways. Although you have number one in the world in terms of quality of life, what do you think that's due to, other than your rather favorable population resource ratio? It's due to a few dramatic reformers who in the 1960s said Canadians are going to have universal health insurance from cradle through nursing home. In the United States, we're the only Western world doesn't have universal health insurance. 40 million uninsured, 20 million underinsured, and the rest falling through cracks when they change jobs and having to engage in co-payments with their employer and deductibles and exclusions and things that Canadians shake their heads in total wonderment when they hear and read about it. And your social safety net, which has its abuses, which can be corrected without getting rid of them, a lot of things that you treasured, the CBC, the National Film Board, the Children's Theater, all the things that you were first in North America and the world on, are under attack. Your mass transit, your railroads, privatization, globalization. That's why we put this book together for you, Canada First. We brought together this book of all the ways Canada was first. You taught us about credit unions. We now have 60 million people in the United States who belong to credit unions, came from Canada. It's not just hockey, you know. Right? Just in order to test you here, which is the reason why we put this book together with Duff Conacher. Duff Conacher here? Duff? Duff Conacher runs Democracy Watch in Ottawa. He helped start Quebec Purg, and he's a young lawyer who is going to the structure of democratic rejuvenation and modernization in Canada. Rejuvenation because it's been dismantled in some ways, and modernization to strengthen it, keep up with the new challenges of global corporations and technology, bureaucracies. We put this together. I sent a manuscript to 7 Canadian publishers. I said, here's a book about Canada first in history, energy, transportation, medicine, communication, education, social welfare, food, environment, science, safety, arts, business, and sport. 7 of them turned me down saying Canadians would not be interested in this. Finally, one of them was persuaded to reconsider, McClellan Stewart, and they put it out, and it was a bestseller for 42 weeks on the paperback bestseller list. Now, when you don't have knowledge of what your society has created, and these right-wing corporate-funded think tanks in your country start to privatize you, globalize you, trivialize you, indenture you, what kind of defense are you going to have cognitively? Let me test you. Just shout out one after the other where you think Canada's first in all these categories that I just mentioned. Let's hear it. Basketball. Go ahead. Football. Volleyball. Go ahead. Telephones. Aha. Computer. Well, what kind? Zipper. What? Flight? Certain kinds of flights? You mean Greenpeace? Insulin, okay? Jet, a certain jet engine. What else?
Canadarm.
Boy, how many times do I hear that one? Go ahead. What else? Come on, running out. Usually stops at about 15. Come on. This is a very knowledgeable audience. Who's that? Huh? Okay, you've made quite good contributions in that area. How about some more distinct ones? Ah, yes, that's right.
Homes in Arizona.
The what?
Homes in Arizona.
Oh, you mean you discovered them? Go ahead. Now you're getting down to it. Snowmobile, okay. That's a mixed message. What else?
Pablo.
Okay, that's right. Okay, I can't verify that. Okay, the digital telephone exchange.
Can do nukes.
Yeah, can do nukes. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Velcro.
Huh?
Velcro.
Okay, Velcro, that's right.
Baseball glove.
Baseball glove?
Baseball.
Now you're becoming Stalinistic. Historical revisionism. Huh? Okay, now let me read you some, all right? Let me read you some. You can't get a more knowledgeable audience about this, you know, randomly chosen. Okay, first social club in North America. You know, like Women's Club, Elks, so on. Okay? Collection of vital statistics. That's not insignificant. First collection of vital statistics about your population. That is in the world. Slavery abolished in Canada before the U.S. Invention of green ink. Standard time. Independence without revolution. Think of how many countries got independence without revolution. Not many. World's largest organization of women at the time. First steamer to cross the Atlantic. Automatic lubricators. You know how important they were in the early part of the 20th century? You ever hear the phrase, the real McCoy? He was a Canadian African American. Died penniless. Tremendous money companies made off of him. He hardly got any royalties. Had all kinds of patents. First transcontinental railway. Longest covered bridge in the world. The first STOL, an aircraft. First aircraft built for the North. First commercial jet transport. The Avro Arrow. First variable pitch propeller. Anti-gravity suit. Foremost anti-pollution cars developed in Canada. Did you know the first commercial oil well was not in Pennsylvania? It was in Canada. First oil company in North America. Development of kerosene. The first light bulb. First in newspaper publishing. First daily newspaper. The free mail. First in free mail. First in free mail to your members of parliament. Radio. Look what you did in radio. First wireless voice message. First radio voice broadcast. First transatlantic wireless message. First batteryless radio and radio station. Telestat Canada. How about this in medicine? First mobile blood transfusion service. First mobile medical unit. The cobalt bomb. First commercially produced electric hand for children. Most children fitted in the world. First foremost neurologist, Wilder Graves Penfield. Pioneer in stress disease links, discovery of insulin, hospital for sick children. The father of psychosomatic medicine, Sir William Osler. How about environment? First bird sanctuary in North America. Greenpeace, the slick licker. Know that? How about this one in the arts? Superman. National Film Board. First motion picture showing in North America. First documentary film. First panoramic camera. First portable film developing system. How about this? The Canada Council. Not many like that. The world's largest government film unit. NFB's Candid Eye series. The paint roller. Automatic control of machine tools. That's a biggie. The green garbage bag. Trivial Pursuit. Sports, lacrosse, native Canadians. First curling club in North America. First golf club in North America. Basketball. Slingshot football goalpost invented in Canada. Five-pin bowling. Synchronized swimming. Yeah, ginger ale is there. Safety. First steam foghorn. First crash position indicator. Explosive vapor detector. And on and on. They're not exhaustive. The point is, you're not taught this in schools. A lot of your histories until recently were written by Americans. Now, this is not to be jingoistic. It's just that if you're always suffering from peculiar insecurity and lack enormous immodesty, Canadians are enormously immodest. I mean, if I asked a group of Texans where Texas was first, you think they'd stop at 15 examples? I mean, they'd take credit for, North America. At any rate, the expectation level is up. Now, here's where it really comes into being. I'll finish on this note. If I were to use the words, mention the following words, crime, violence, welfare, and regulation, what would come to mind? Would it be street crime, street violence, wars, poverty, welfare, and government regulation? Because we grow up corporate and we don't challenge the fact that what we own is a commonwealth we don't control, we look at our cable stations and give them monopolies and don't have a citizen channel. We don't have a labor channel. We don't have a student channel 24 hours a day. Why not? Got plenty of channels around. More crime, more violence, more welfare, and more regulation comes from big corporations. By far. In the U.S., 28,000 homicides last year, 65,000 deaths from air pollution, preventable. 100,000 deaths in workplace from trauma and disease, preventable. 420,000 deaths from tobacco, largely due to kids being hooked by tobacco companies at an early age and spiking it with nicotine. They have some responsibility, the tobacco drug dealers, for those deaths. And then there are hundreds of thousands of deaths, preventable, unsafely designed automobiles, and all kinds of other things. Flammable fabrics, bad side effects to drugs that were covered up, Dalkon Shield that mutilated hundreds of thousands of women. In terms of financial crimes, no comparison. Bank robberies took less than $500 million last year. Most of them were caught. The banks themselves have stolen huge amounts from people. The SNL debacle. The looting by our savings and loans, for example, in the 1970s and 80s, we're now bailing them out $500 billion. $500 billion in principal and interest between the years 1990 and the year 2020. In terms of financial fraud, scams in the marketplace, ripoffs, no comparison. Welfare, $200 billion a year from corporations, get it from the U.S. government. Subsidies, bailouts, guarantees, protections from marketplace competition, monopoly licenses, giveaways. There's a drug known as Taxol in the United States. It was developed as an anti-ovarian cancer drug by $31 million of taxpayer money by government scientists and National Institutes of Health. All the way to the clinical trials. Under government policy, they gave it away free under a monopoly marketing agreement to Bristol-Myers Squibb, which is charging $10,000 to $20,000 per patient series. So a woman wrote us the other day, she was not poor enough to qualify for Medicaid. She has ovarian cancer. She went to her doctor. The doctor says you need 6 shots at $2,000 a shot, and she can't afford it. And it was a drug completely developed and tested by the taxpayer, government scientists, given away with no price restraints and no royalties to a private drug company. That happens all the time with many drugs. The hard rock metals on federal lands, companies can go stake their mine, gold mine, molybdenum mine, free, free. They don't pay us anything by way of royalties. At least you get some royalties for those mines on the crown lands. In fact, a Canadian company discovered $9 billion worth of gold in Nevada a few years ago on federal land, U.S. government land, under the 1872 Mining Act. They get to keep all of it minus their expenses. No royalties back to the government and no controls on environmental cyanide contaminated wreckage when they close the mine. So this is what goes on in terms of corporate welfare, for starters. Corporate regulation, you are regulated far more by corporations than by government. First of all, a lot of the government regulation comes from corporate lobbies. Like they make you pay more taxes, so they pay less taxes. Who lobbies in Ottawa for that? You got some of the big conglomerates in your country. They're ridiculously low payment in terms of taxes. They're giving away all kinds of mineral and other resources. But look at the ways you are regulated. You're regulated in terms of banking regulations. You know, what they charge you in the banks. You're regulated by insurance. You're regulated by whether you will get certain kinds of coverage in terms of non-health insurance. You're regulated in terms of the air and the water you breathe. Most of it comes from corporate polluters. They are regulating a degree of healthful use of the environment. You're regulated in terms of the integrity of your elections because they contribute most of the money. When they sell you products that are safer and they know how to produce economically, your life and health and safety are being regulated. In the United States, when women are pregnant and they go to these HMO hospitals, until recently, they were drive-through births, not even overnight. You want to get them out and cut the money so they save the money to pay the executives tens of millions of dollars a year and prop the stock prices. There are now drive-through mastectomies in the United States. They go in, outpatient mastectomies by these conglomerate HMOs. So who regulates who? In our country, the health insurance companies and conglomerates regulate us. The government is a passing ship in the mist compared to corporate regulation. Who's affecting the natural regulatory processes of Mother Nature more? Government? They do to some degree, and they have nuclear tests, etc. But the business community, the ozone depletion doesn't come heavily from government action. It may come from government inaction. So these are just ways of thinking about how we grow up corporate. We grew up corporate in the auto area when they blame everything on the driver. Well, the driver is responsible, but so is the vehicle, so is the crash protection deficiency, so are the highways, etc. And if we grow up thinking it's all the individual fault of the person behind the wheel, we won't push for safer cars or safer highways, which are much more reliable ways to prevent death and injury because cars and highways don't have a bad day at the office, they're not sleepy, they don't get drunk, etc. It's much more stable to do it through the engineering approach. So I'll leave it at that and leave it with one question. How many students here are determined, after they finish your formal education, become leaders in advancing justice in Canada or the world as you see it? Leaders in advancing justice. Let me just see. How many are determined to become followers? Yeah, you have your weekends off. So the majority of you have not yet made up your mind. You have consigned this important decision to a temporary merit of limbo, I take it. Well, think about it, because when you get out, you may no longer have the option or the time to think about it. That's the important thing. Use your time now to think about it. Those of you who want to talk to Duff Conacher, he'll be up there. Maybe he'll be by the Quebec Perg table. Talk to the Pergers. Start your own group, whatever. Make your mark on your university before you graduate to develop that sense of legacy and the citizen tools that you will need to forge for the glorious struggles ahead. Because the bottom line is, democracy is the most important mechanism yet devised to solve major problems and to reduce injustices. And justice truly is our great work of human beings on earth. And you want to be a part of it. If you're not a part of it, you're part of the problem. Thank you.